It is 4 minutes after 8 o'clock. This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, November 18th of 2022. I am your host, Rosanna Longobetter. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Latino Chamber of Commerce opens a new physical space to continue providing support for diverse small businesses. Then we will visit a dress rehearsal for a dance theater performance opening this weekend at the Dairy Arts Center. After that, it's .org. And then finally, we will have sports talk with Jimmy Sirifoss. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. Connections comes your way with host Duncan Campbell and Lisa Graves. They will talk about the intergenerational elders, youth, women, and people of color for democracy, rights, and freedom versus autocratic colonial supremacy. As always, our phone lines will be open. And then at 9:30, Dusty Groves with Gretchen Troop will be in the Boulder studio for the morning sound alternative. That's all still ahead this morning. But first, the headlines with KGNU's Stacy Johnson.
The school board to Denver Public Schools rejected Thursday another revised school closure plan revealed by the district superintendent moments into their meeting. Just as board members were ready to discuss and vote on closing five schools during last night's meeting, Superintendent Alex Moreo introduced another revision to the school closure plan that further reduced the number of recommended closures to two schools, Denver Discovery School and Mathematics and Science Leadership Academy. Earlier in the week, DPS officials reduced a recommended list of 10 school closures to 5, with the district placing the recommendation for a board member vote Thursday evening. The superintendent said he made the additional change after hearing objections by students and community members at a public comment session the district held earlier in the week. The Denver Post reports most board members expressed dismay over the last-minute revision and questioned if Moreo's actions violated open meeting laws by not being noticed on the school board's agenda. According to the Denver Post, all but one board member voted against closing the two schools, while also unanimously revoking a resolution directing the superintendent to develop a consolidation plan. During the meeting, board members expressed they and district officials will still need to decide on how to address the challenges caused by low enrollment. County clerks in Congressional District 3 released updated vote results Thursday showing Republican incumbent Lauren Boebert maintaining a lead over her Democratic opponent Adam Frisch by 551 votes. The Denver Post reports only Moffitt County still had ballots left to report, and the number of ballots remaining to be tabulated from the county is 25. The latest unofficial posting by the Secretary of State's office was around 8:30 p.m. last night. With the margin of the votes in the race being less than 0.5% of the votes received by the leading candidate, the race is likely headed to an automatic recount as required by Colorado law. According to Colorado Public Radio, an automatic recount will not likely change the outcome of the race based on historical precedent. The last day for election officials to complete a statutory recount is December 13th. Denver Auditor Timothy O'Brien announced Thursday he and his staff recently completed an audit examining the city's trash and recycling services, which revealed critical issues as the city will launch a new volume-based program in 2023. O'Brien says because the city's solid waste management division is severely understaffed, as well as working with an aging and unreliable fleet of trucks, the division will unlikely be able to handle the upcoming changes in expanded services for volume-based pricing, or otherwise known as the pay-as-you-throw program. Under the new program, the cost of trash pickup for users will be based on how much a residential unit throws away, while recycling and compost materials will have no extra charges. According to O'Brien, Denver had a 21% vacancy rate among its trash service drivers as of last summer and predicts the rate will double as the city needs more staffing for expanded recycling and composting services under the new volume pricing program. Among other criticisms, O'Brien also said Denver spent more than $10 million on repairs for aging trucks, while a new truck would cost the city approximately $350,000. Billionaires Phil and Nancy Anschutz have had their $8 million tax return case reopened. KGNU's Jack Armstrong has more.
The Colorado Court of Appeals ruled that Judge J. Eric Eliff made an error in dismissing the Anschutz case and has ordered Judge Eliff to reopen the case. The appellate court agrees with the Anschutz case after reversing the dismissal of the lower court case yesterday. The Anschutz case argues that the Anschutz's excessive business losses in the year 2018 qualify them for an $18 million tax refund. The Colorado Appeals Court agrees with the Anschutz's position that Colorado does take on any federal tax rhetoric and came out saying that the CARES Act does apply to the year 2018. In the original dismissal, Judge Eliff argued that the Anschutz's case could diminish state government funding. The case could have broad implications for more taxation and revenue cases across Colorado, as more could file refunds if the Anschutz receive a favorable outcome in their case. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
After months of discussion, the Fort Collins City Council voted unanimously against a minimum wage increase during its Tuesday meeting. According to the Fort Collins Coloradan, council members hope to revisit the issue with more community engagement and have scheduled another vote May 16th. City staff recommended a minimum wage option informed by resident and business owner feedback that would increase an hourly wage to $18.74 by 2030, with pay increasing incrementally by $1 annually for the first 3 years and then using an estimated consumer price index to calculate other future increases. The Coloradan reports about a half a dozen people, many of whom were business owners, spoke against the issue prior to the council's vote and said a wage increase would cause harm to their businesses. One small business owner supported the minimum wage increase. The Boulder Public Library opened a new photo exhibit Thursday displaying the works of Boulder's unhoused population. According to the exhibit's organizers, the analog photography project titled Lived Experience aims to elevate the stories of people experiencing homelessness to inspire social change. Visual artist B. Goodell of Unboxed Photography collaborated with the organization Feet Forward by distributing cameras and allowing participants to capture visual expression and images on 35mm black and white film. The Boulder Arts Commission provided grant funding for the project, which will be on display at the library through mid-January. The City of Boulder, through a partnership with Downtown Boulder and the art technology company Novabuy, are inviting community members to explore Boulder's downtown area in a brand new self-guided augmented reality tour called Snow Much Fun. The city says, starting Sunday, November 20th, outdoor signage will instruct visitors to scan QR codes using their smartphone camera, which will prompt the automatic opening of Instagram. Through the Instagram filters, users will then be able to experience content in 3D. The city says 11 Winter Wonderland or experiential activations will be along Pearl Street and the Boulder Public Library area. Because of frigid temps today, the Boulder Shelter for the Homeless will have increased capacity tonight to service unhoused community members with no restrictions. Denver also has expanded its overnight capacity by providing shelter stay this evening at the Carla Madison Recreation Center. The National Weather Service is predicting snow will end around 9 a.m. this morning. Today's highs will be in the low to mid-20s throughout the upper metro Front Range region. Tonight, skies will be mostly clear with lows of 6 degrees for Fort Collins, 9 degrees for Boulder, and 10 degrees for Denver. The current temperature in Boulder is 8 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacey Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine. I am your host, Rosanna Longo-Better. The Latino Chamber of Commerce played an important role during the COVID pandemic and actively helped with applications to access federal loans or other supports for undocumented business owners. During that time, the Latino Chamber expanded virtual services outside Boulder County, and recently they have opened a physical office to better serve small business owners. This week, I spoke with Berenice Garcia Telles, who has been the board chair since 2019, about the importance of supporting the growing Latino community small businesses in the state.
We serve Boulder County Latino businesses, but anyone can join our chamber. You don't need to identify as a Latino, but you love collaborating with the Latino community.
The Latino Chamber has put together a new space for people to get together and collaborate, but more than anything, really create and continue this family energy that you have brought.
Exactly. 2 weeks ago, we opened our space in Longmont. We are located in 1925 Pike Road, Longmont 80501. So you can find us there from Tuesday to Friday from 2 to 5 p.m. You don't need an appointment to see us and to ask for help, support. And we're going to do a lot of work about business support and economic development, mainly in Spanish. We will continue doing bilingual stuff, but we want to leverage other partners' programming about taxes, marketing, that is already in English. But we identify that many Latino businesses prefer to learn about these topics in their native language.
What are the barriers that you have identified for small business owners that are diverse?
Yeah, some of the barriers that we identify through in COVID and we continue identifying is we come, especially immigrant Latino businesses, we come from countries where there are not many regulations when you want to open a business. You know, in Mexico, in my own experience, my dad has a small shop. And if he chooses the street, he just opened the shop. But here in the U.S., you need to look at the zoning, whether or not you need a building permit, a fire inspection, how to navigate all the public health food license. It's totally different from our country. So we need to really help businesses do that due diligence, because we have had experiences where they signed a lease contract without knowing all these permits. So they have to go back, and sometimes they have to finish the lease because they didn't understand and no one told them. And now they know that the Latino Chamber is there to guide them. And my message to any entrepreneur who wants to open a business is to first ask, don't sign any contract, and come ask us questions. And one of our programming for next year will be about contracts and the due diligence to open a business. And we're going to be working with many cities, with the planners and building managers, to tell us, you know, what are the steps in order for us to translate that information into Spanish and give programming to this business entrepreneur, because it's really important.
Now, something that is extremely important to highlight is that, yes, you are Boulder County Latino Chamber of Commerce, located in Longmont, but I know also that you have been providing services for the whole state of Colorado. People come from other cities and other counties to ask for your support. That started in COVID. The service is not only located here, but you are expanding.
Yeah, exactly. Something that we identify, and myself and Jonathan Galindo, he's our vice chair of the chamber, we went to a conference in D.C. About the Latino Business Summit. And it was like all the companies or organizations supporting small businesses that are Latino. And something that is really a niche or unique is our one-on-one support, this touch, this human touch that we have when we implement our services. Because we operate like at any chamber organization internally, but the way that we deliver services, we apply the identity card, the cultural aspects. And that is something that it's a key service, if you want to call it. Like, we navigate the process with a business owner. And that takes time and capacity from our staff and myself and others. So businesses have really find that they appreciate that connection. And yeah, we have people from Grand Junction, Pueblo, some people from Frederic Dacono that it's a new market that we are exploring because many of our community members, you know, the affordability of Boulder County, they cannot afford living here, but they live in Weld County, and now they are seeing like Weld County as a market. So we're gonna start working in how to open a business, a food truck over there.
Why is it important to have a Latino Chamber of Commerce providing services for minority and underrepresented groups that start businesses?
Yeah, one of the things that we are resilient, and we saw it through COVID, for us, because of the situations that our communities have experienced in this country, for us, COVID was like, okay, one thing more. Like, didn't make us sad or just stay at home. We had to continue working, and we are resilient. And that resiliency, it's an asset. It's an asset. If I was a CEO of a company, I will start, you know, engaging the Latino Chamber in how I can diversify and bring workers to my company, because you guys are resilient, are hardworking. And I was reading a McKinsey study this morning that says that these companies are not really leverage this power that we have. We're growing, and if they really want to continue being a powerful industry or growing, and we have an economic power that is huge. I read some statistics that they say that if we were a whole country, the U.S. Latinos, we will be the fifth economy in the world. So imagine, and companies, they haven't tapped into that. And I don't know if it's because of the visibility, the discrimination, and the bias that some communities have towards the Latinos, or it's just something that they haven't thought. Think about it. And the Latino Chamber is there to be that platform to connect the non-Latino and the Latino communities, to bridge that gap to do business together. Because studies say when you have more diversity, you have more productivity, more efficiency, and more effective results.
Berenice Garcia Tellez this morning here with us at KGNU Community Radio. While many people are not referring to the pandemic in the past tense, some arts groups are just now emerging, disengaging pause buttons that were hit in 2020. Such is the case with the Third Law Dance Theater performance of Adaptation, opening tonight at the Dairy Arts Center in Boulder. News director Shannon Young stopped by a dress rehearsal and shares this preview.
We're here today at a rehearsal for a show that's going to be opening this weekend at the Dairy Arts Center. It's called Adaptation, A New Love Story. And the promotional materials say that this is a satirical exploration of our obsession with convenience and its role in our planet's climate crisis. How do you convey satire with dance?
Well, as you just saw in part of the rehearsal, through each section, we move through an ideal of the movement, then into kind of this satirical breakdown, which happened in a Broadway musical format, and then went into the adaptation of the movement. I don't know if that'll make sense in the radio, but
you know, it makes more sense seeing it, right? Yeah, and I had these questions in my head before I came here, and also asking about how do you get into commentary about social issues, for example. Art is often used as a medium for commenting on social issues, but dance isn't necessarily the first medium that comes to mind. Why choose dance when theater or music is right there?
Well, I think that's why we always had dance theater in our title, because we do use a lot of theatrical elements. And I think dance can absolutely speak to different current issues that are going on, because those issues are not just going on externally, they're going on internally inside the body. And that's kind of how we use the body as a source for material to create ideas.
This production also has an original score. What all goes into that?
Well, I work with and collaborate with composer Paul Fowler, and he's doing like a reimagining of a Radiohead song and this Broadway musical piece that you just saw of Mr. Cellophane from the musical Chicago. And he puts it all together into all these different sections. He'll weave it together to give sense to it.
Many people speak of the pandemic in the past tense. We're both wearing masks right now in this interview, and all the dancers are masked. So pandemic's not quite over yet. How has it been for your company as a performing arts group going through this pandemic, staying employed through it? Is this the first big test of a comeback, or have you been able to do other performances before this one?
Well, one of the reasons I think we were able to keep going during the pandemic is because we shifted so quickly and went to alternative spaces outdoors. So we did things in a parking garage, on outdoor stages. We're looking to do something inside a drained city pool sometime in the future. And our audience loved those alternative venues. But we also want to honor where we've come from the theater, from a theatrical background. So this is the performance that we were going to do when we got shut down 2.5 years ago. So we're doing it now.
How has the company been able to stay afloat financially? Was it due to federal funds, and are those funds now phasing out?
Yeah, we are funded through a lot of different grants, FCFD, Boulder Arts Commission, Colorado Creative Industries, and we were so thankful that funding continued. And also, a lot of times with the arts, if you don't do performances, you save money. So, unfortunately. And we weren't doing as many performances during the pandemic, but as many as we could.
The dance company is named Third Law. Where does that come from?
Newton's Third Law of Motion. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction, which speaks to dance for me.
Tell us again when the performances are and where, and any other information or any other place where people can find additional information about this performance.
They can find any information on our website at thirdlaw.org, or on the Dairy website. The performance is at the Dairy Arts Center on November 18th and 19th at 7:30 p.m. and on Sunday at 3 p.m.
Katie Elliott is the artistic director of Third Law Dance Theater. Thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
UpNext.org.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits.
Hi, this is Chris Schultz with KGNews.org, and I'm here with Rich Pecoraro from Massa Seed Foundation.
Massa Seed Foundation, acronym for Mutual Admiration Seed Association. So it came out of an admiration to the fellow seeds people in the world, and that we really weren't here to compete with Monsanto or anybody else who works with seed. Our central mission, which is to grow and raise seeds to adapt to the Front Range. And so foundationally, we're kind of going back in time a bit to where local seed houses played a foundational role in carrying regional varieties, adapted varieties, new and upcoming things that people were growing that had success. Our mission is to stabilize this set of genetics in a certain sense, and this set of seeds, to have really sound offering for gardeners and small scale farmers alike. And in some cases, even large scale farmers, which we're almost at that stage in a few places.
It seems very sciencey. I see you have folks volunteering from backyard farms.
It's classified as on-farm breeding. We do cross-pollinate things, But at the same time, most of our work is evolutionary. It's selection work. And everybody can participate in selection. In fact, it's good to have lots of eyes on selection to think of if a variety is improving or not. You know, taste tests, performance tests. How do you like working with this crop? So it all becomes part of the daily. We really do weave the science and the social. It's actually a lot of work, but we really welcome it. And the more we have people come who are interested, the more we start to develop even some new direction, or at least strengthen some of the directions that we want to go in. Honestly, the people who volunteer, sometimes they turn into devoted people who are actually really important in making the change happen for us, or strengthening our administration and shoring up our logos and working on the back ends. And there's a lot of participation here. So we actually are run probably 2/3 by devoted members and volunteers in a lot of ways. The foundation has a really wonderful destination where we farm and where we're located on 75th and Arapaho. And the intention is to really make a more seamless connection between the public or the consumer and the farmer and the grower and the producer. You know, it's seeds, produce, botanical plants, it's education. Some of our youths are really developing into good managers now, and so our youth program is coming up. The farm is a series of gardens, and the gardens are themes, and the themes relate to, in some cases, origins where those plants come from. So our gardens range from Mediterranean style seed and food gardens to North and South and Central American style gardens. The botanical garden farm park interest that we're aiming at here is a place that people can come, stay out of the way of the dangerous working areas if there is or whatever, but to actually be able to enjoy the gardens and the farm and come pick up some products that we produce.
You've been listening to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits. For more .orgs or for more information on this episode, visit news.kgnu.org.
Up next, we have sports talk.
When the World Cup comes around every 4 years, people love to ask me, Jimmy, do you call it soccer or do you call it football? Well, I'd let you know I like to call it. Hello and welcome back to the best sports show on KGNU, Sports Talk with Jimmy. I am your host, Jimmy Searfoss, back again with more news from across the Front Range on this cold, cold Friday morning. Hoping everyone's staying warm out there. Guys, it is finally here. The 2022 Qatar World Cup is here, and America has a team. Americans finally have someone to cheer for since 2014. That was the last time America had a team compete in the World Cup. They failed to qualify in 2018 when the cup was in Russia. Of course, the World Cup is the biggest sporting event in the world. It happens only every 4 years. It's a soccer tournament that combines a select few countries from around the world to come in and compete. Back in 2018, 3.5 billion with a B tuned in to watch the cup. For reference, there was roughly 7.6 billion people on the planet at the time. This year's World Cup is expected to reach 5 billion viewers by the end of it, according to Yahoo. And with America back in it, you can expect a lot of Americans to be tuning into these games wearing their stars and stripes. And it's nice to finally have a team to call your own. And for Coloradans, it's nice to have someone to root for as well, because in the last 9 times the United States have been selected to play in the World Cup, they've gone without a player from Colorado. Ethan Horvath is breaking that mold. Horvath is a 27-year-old goalkeeper from Highlands Ranch. He was born here, raised here. He played youth club soccer here. He attended high school here. He went to Arapaho High School where he played 2 years of varsity soccer. He plays for Luton Town FC, a soccer club all the way in England. He's played everywhere, though. The United States, Norway, and even Belgium. He is just the 4th Colorado native to make a men's or women's FIFA World Cup roster ever. He's one of the 3 goaltenders selected for the U.S. men's team. He's currently listed as a backup, but you never know what will happen. Especially in tournament play,
someone gets cold, someone starts playing poorly, he could always get the call. The U.S. men's soccer team head coach Greg Berhalter has spoken very highly of Horvath. In a press conference, he said that Horvath is the type of guy to always be ready to get his number called. And this isn't his first time donning the Stars and Stripes. While it is his first time for the World Cup, he's been competing for Teams USA since he's been growing up. He played for the U-14 squad, the under-20 squad, and the under-23 squad. He was on the United States roster for the CONCACAF National Finals, of which the United States won. That is a tournament that puts all of the continent's countries in a tournament, so that would have been North America featuring the United States, Mexico, Canada, Costa Rica. But this, the World Cup, is quite the step up. And come November 21st, he will have to be ready as the United States takes on Wales for their first match of the tournament. And that is all the time I have for you today. Make sure you tune into the World Cup and enjoy the culture surrounding such a massive event. It's always exciting to watch. I'll see you guys next week on the next edition of Sports Talk with Jimmy. I've been your host, Jimmy Searfoss.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I have been your host, Rosanna Longobetter.